the OTB Podcast Network. The OTB Sports app. Listen to OTB Sports Radio 24/7, plus all your favorite podcasts, including OTB Gold.
Are you a complete rookie?
The OTB Sports app. Available to download now from your app store.
The Off the Ball Podcast on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.
Now, you're welcome back. It's part two of our first remote road show in partnership with Cadbury FC. We're going to be doing quite a few of these with Cadbury's over the next while. You can check out cadburyfc.com for updates on promotions and giveaways. We have Paddy Bonner and Shay Given still with us. Lads, I want to talk about the goalkeeping position, which has changed more than most over the last couple of decades. Here's a quote from you, Paddy, talking to Michael Walker a while back. You were talking about the back pass rule changing. I mean, this is for viewers of a certain age. So the back pass rule changing. You said to Michael Walker, "I was horrified. In a way, it killed my career," which is was interesting. You're doing something for 20 years, and then someone tells you you can't do that anymore. That was an amazing quote. It horrified me. In a way, it killed my career. Was the back pass rule change as bad as that for you? Yeah.
Well, listen, I was so delighted that I was getting to the end of my career. It was 1993 when the pass back rule came in, believe it or not. And some people say that I was a result of this aspect, because we used to do this short throw out to Mick McCarthy, and Mick would knock it back to me, and we'd knock it and knock it and knock it, trying to waste a little bit of time, especially in the heat down in Italy. And then they changed the rule after that. But it came in 1993, and listen, I was 33 years old, and really so. I was never really asked to pass the ball out. I was about kicking. I was about catching. It was about making saves, crosses, all of those type of things. And I came in. So I had to adapt very quickly, you know. And I always think back on the great goalkeepers, the role models that I had, the Peter Shiltons, the Ray Clemens, Pat Jennings, and Joe Corrigan, we mentioned earlier, and so on. And how they would get on with the pass back in their lives. Like, Peter Shilton was a fantastic goalkeeper, world-class goalkeeper, one of the best. But he couldn't kick the ball that far, and he couldn't kick it over really onto the halfway line. And I always wondered if that was that rule came in then, would he be able to adapt and change his game? Pat Jennings, I'm sure, would have, because he could do anything. Like, he was my hero and that. But it definitely was a big, big culture shock. And the other thing that at that particular time, No coach kind of looked at it and said, well, this is how we have to get the other players outfield to give opportunity to the goalkeeper. Every pass back came to you, everybody ran up the pitch. Everybody, so all you could see was numbers on players' backs. And you had to deal with it, whether you had it first time, took a touch and then had it. But there was no kind of passing out. It was almost, hey, give it to me, take a touch and kick it up the pitch. Mm. Or out of play if you're under pressure. There was no building of the game from the back. So that was it. So it came in very, very suddenly and very quickly. I always remember a game against Spain, down in Spain, and Jack Charlton obviously was the manager. And it was one of those nights where they kept knocking the ball back to me, and I almost hit every ball. You know, when you're playing golf and you have a one iron or a two iron and you actually smack the ball, and it's one of them days you walk off, oh, I hit that ball. Every ball came back to me, I hit it first time. And I smacked it, and it went straight up to John Aldridge or up to Tony Casper in the river was playing. And I came off the pitch afterwards, and Jack said, "Oh, you're hitting the ball well there, son. Oh, you're hitting the ball well." And there was no thought process whatsoever in it. It was just, can I hit that ball first time, and can I make a connection? And that's really what it was about. It's only probably even in the last, what would you say, Shay, maybe the last 10 to 15 years that people really have been thinking about building it properly. Even in Shay's time in the early days, I'm sure he had probably the same problems that I had, you know?
Yeah, when you mentioned, Paddy, the names and numbers, I used to get the ball back to me when it first came out. It was like, nobody wanted the ball back off me. It was kind of like, got no solution. Just give it back to the keeper. We're getting up the pitch. So your job, Joe, was to clear it as far as you could. I would love to play now with the two centre-half splitting, the wing-backs high, the number six is dropping in. You know, they play out and have all these options on the ball, and it was the opposite for me. But I think it definitely helped the game. As you say, Paddy mentions wasting time and stuff. You remember the old sort of pictures and the guys picking. It's funny when you see goalkeepers picking the ball up now. You know, young kids go, "Why is he doing that, Daddy?" or whatever. Why is he picking the ball up? Is that not a free kick? You know, they don't know any different. The young kids now, they're growing up with playing with the ball at their feet to the young keepers and stuff. And I think it's moved the game on in a good way, actually. It's
Yeah.
kept the game,
Yeah,
you know,
it's
more alive, you're
appreciated.
less wasting time, what have you, but it
The
has, the
other, the
goalkeeper
other.
has to be nearly as good with his feet now as he does with his hands. I mean, your job is to keep the ball in the net, but you look at probably the best example is Ederson at Manchester City. For me, he's just a phenomenal goalkeeper, you know, very good with his hands, but with his feet, you will not see a better probably player or passer of the ball in world football. You know, if you ever get a chance to go and watch Man City and get there early and watch the goalkeeper warm up, Ederson is just absolutely phenomenal with the ball at his feet.
Yeah.
That's the top. You know, we're all probably striving to get there and work with the goalkeepers at Derby, you know, of course, to try and improve their kicking and stuff. And you think we do lots of stuff with our hands in training, but then when it comes to a match day, you've probably got, I don't know exact stats, but maybe 70% with your feet and 30% with your hands, you know. So you have to take that in when you're planning a session. You have to think of the kids and the goalkeepers. They have to improve and have to be so much better with the ball at their feet. Have to be comfortable. Have to use the goalkeeper as basically an outfield player when you have possession. So the game has moved on a lot.
Yeah, the other big interesting, you go back to my day, was the pitches. You know, I look back at some of the pitches. My God, the ball was moving, and what you had to do is almost keep your eye on the ball to try to be able to strike that ball. And if you're hitting it first time, especially, you had to almost keep your eye, so you couldn't actually see, get your head up to see. Now players can actually have their head up almost to the last second and know what was happening with the opposition and how they're closing you down and so on. So that's been a big change. Also, the balls also, by the way, even the balls, I remember being up in Scotland and the mitre ball used to have, oh, be horrible. It used to take all the water in and there was no almost plastic skin in it. Now the balls are completely different also. So there's been a lot of advances and change, but the big change has been in coaching. The big change has been in coaching, Joe. There's no question about that. And what we've been trying to do over, and Shay's been on the course down in Northern Ireland, which I ran in it, is trying to get the goalkeeper coach now to not just be a technical coach or be working on the physical, but work now on the tactical side. So that means then that he has to have so much different relationship with the head coach and assistant coach and so on, and try to think about the tactical side of the game. Yes, the most important thing is still keeping the ball to the net. Absolutely. That's number uno. But the other part of it, because of the stats that Jay talked about, 70% with your feet on when you're in touch with the ball, is that means then that you have to adapt your training accordingly. And that's been I think, the big lesson that we all have to adapt and change. The funny thing for me, if I go back to my early coaching days, I became the goalkeeper coach at Celtic, Ireland. We weren't doing any of that type of work. We definitely had to do a little bit more on passing and so on, but no real tactical work. It was very much isolated work. And I only worked with Shay and Alan Kelly and Dean and so on, and maybe watched what Mick McCarthy was doing or Tommy Burns and so on. But 6 months later, I got a job down in Reading with Tommy as assistant manager. And because my title changed as a goalkeeper coach to an assistant coach, I now could take the players. I could take the back four, I could take the midfielders, I could take the goalkeepers, and I could put on sessions and start that whole process of learning how to become a coach. And that was my learning, I suppose, Joe, from a perspective as a young man. And I got that opportunity. Most goalkeeper coaches go straight from playing into goalkeeper coaching and they don't get that opportunity. And that's why the educational side now is very, very important to them. And I know Shay's been through it and he might want to say something on his experience of going on the course and then getting the job, and now what Cocu does with you in relation to a Dutch manager and what you're expected.
Yeah, Paddy, as he said, done the course up in Belfast, and you know, it wasn't about how to catch the ball, Joe, or it wasn't about, you know, making saves and all. It's about the near enough taking the gloves off as a goalie coach and actually looking at the opposition, looking how they press a goalkeeper, how you would set up as a team, what you want from your goalkeeper and your back four and different things. And Cocky's really good in that sense. He's really open to everything he does. He shares everything. You know, for me, from a learning point of view, he's fantastic as well. And last couple of days, we just signed David Marshall actually at Derby, and last year Wigan. He was at Wigan, of course, and probably didn't look to play out that much from the back. You know, he probably was a bit more direct, whereas we proper like want to play from the back. We want to keep possession of the ball, and so I'm going to have to adapt David in the sense I've got to. Not that he's not comfortable with the ball at his feet. I've looked at him carefully, obviously, when you're recruitment and stuff. But you know, spoke to Philip yesterday about next week doing sessions with the back four and maybe the couple of midfielders and stuff, and just. getting three or four strikers to be closing them down, and just to have that sort of calmness when the ball comes back to him, and just building it up, that sort of, just the we mentioned before about the work, you know, the belief in how we want to play, and it's a different manager, different system, and a different club now that David's joining, so he has to adapt to that as well. And my job with the manager is to get that message through to him, and obviously the centre halves and the defenders in front of him as well.
And it's such an interesting area at the moment in football, because clearly teams and their high pressing is better than ever and more organised than ever and more deadly than ever. Like, we saw Real Madrid come undone against Manchester City. There are countless examples, Shay. So at the level you're at, there must be a risk assessment here. Like, why are we taking this chance? How do you come to the conclusion that we are much better off taking the chance of playing out for the back? And obviously, if we get caught in possession this close to our own goal, we're in big trouble. What's the logic, or is it just more of a philosophy? Yeah, well, I don't know. Can you come up with stats?
Yeah, there's risk and reward, Joe. I think, you know, if you have the ball, keep the ball, you can pass through the different thirds of the pitch. Then you always think, if you can keep the ball rather than old school, launch it up to the big man, and hopefully that you get the knockdowns or whatever it is. I think the game's moved on so much. I think you've got to get the balance right, because recently we all seen Bayern Munich dismantle Barcelona, and Ter Stegen's very good with the ball at his feet as well. But in the first half, he kept playing and playing and playing as if they didn't have a plan B. Now, at Derby, if a team high presses us and really goes all out to high press, then we try and miss the press. You know, not going to create the space for a striker, the number nine, knock it in, and then maybe your wingers come in and your midfielders back it up, because it was near enough suicide football the other night when I was watching Ter Stegen. And no one, or anyone, Piqué or anyone, said, like, hang on a minute here, this is... You know, Bayern Munich was getting so many chances on the goal. It was ridiculous. So Ter Stegen's an experienced goalkeeper as well. I felt at some point in the first half, he says, right, I'm going to try to play a bit longer up to Suarez or try and drop it into Messi or whatever. He just kept persisting with the playing out. And that's not right either. So you have to get the balance right, how the opposition set up against you, of course. But us at Derby, we want to keep the ball as much as we can. But at the same time, the gaffer will say, right, if it's risky, or if it's too much of a high press on the opposition, then we're going to miss that out.
Can I come in on that conversation, Joe? Because I've done a lot of analysis now on the Champions League and the Europa League. And to be honest, I think you're absolutely right, Joe, that teams probably overdo it. It's all about getting the opportunity for the goalkeeper. And Shay's absolutely right in this one also, is that, you know, young coaches or coaches take, we have to build the game from the back. What does that mean? If the opportunity is there, yes, you can play it to your centre half or maybe a midfielder. But if the press comes and it comes really high, then the spaces are higher up the pitch. So you've got to be able to have that ability as a goalkeeper to see that. And also the players have got to give you the opportunity to exploit that space high up the pitch. So it's, when you work on the pitch as a coach now, you've got to work with the whole team and you've got to work with the other coaches to create those opportunities. If you look at... probably Buffon was probably the best goalkeeper for a goalkeeper who came, he's now 42, still, by the way, on the bench at Juventus. But he had to adapt his game over the years, but he got the players in front of him playing three at the back. And the two centre-halves almost went to the byline to create even more space and more opportunity for him. And if you look now at Inter Milan, they're doing exactly the same, Godin on one side, right on the touchline. What that means then is that those players who are pressing, they've got to go even 10, 15 yards higher to make contact with the ball. That creates even more space higher up the pitch. And the goalkeeper's got to maybe be able to make decisions now. And how do you make decisions? You can't make decisions if you're just doing passing and individual work just on the pitch. Fine, you'll do your technique work. But you've got to be able to make those decisions within game-related practice. And that's the big, big change from our life now as goalkeeper coaches for me. Yes, we'll work individually, there's no question about that, but we've got to go into the training sessions, what the other players, as Shay rightly says, and so on. That's been a bit evolution. That has been a big, big change, probably over the last, maybe, say, 6 years, Shay, that now is coming around. And in some countries, it's still a big challenge because the head coaches who are older don't really believe that is happening. But that's what's going on. And your question about why do you do it is about trying to keep possession of the ball, but trying then to sort of go from transition to defend straight into transition to attack very, very quickly. And you can do that with one pass or three or four passes, depending on the situation.
Shay, what about concentration as a goalkeeper? Because unlike the outfield players who are pretty much engaged the whole time, there probably are moments where as a goalkeeper you can afford to switch off. Nobody's going to necessarily notice if you're stood there with your hands on your hips and the ball's in the other half. I mean, you can think what's for dinner tonight and the world probably won't end. So I would suspect, you know, people have ups and downs in life, personal things going on. Who knows, you know, what's going on? You might have things in your mind. Did you try and stay regimentedly focused on the game and where the ball was at all times? Or was it even a good thing to switch off during a game for a minute?
Yeah. It just reminded me of a funny clip, Joe, recently. I don't know, a couple of years ago. There was this fella behind the goal, I don't know if you've seen it, and the young kid in goal lost concentration, and the ball was coming, and the dad just comes and pushes him over the ball, and they knock on the replay, and the dad goes, ah, leave it, like, it was just raging, his dad, I don't know if you remember seeing that, but the young kid, obviously, concentration,
dad,
he switched off and forgot what
was
he was doing.
Shay, was your dad behind the goal when you were young? Was Seamus behind the goal, giving you direction?
Yeah, my dad was a madman behind the goal when I was a kid. He'd be like, go, dive, jump, like raging at me like every 2 seconds. I was like, but it was just he's obviously passionate and wanted me to do well and stuff, you know, but he's always barking orders behind the goal. But Packy actually gave me a bit of good advice when I was a kid as well. He used to always say when the ball was up the other side of the pitch, he would say like to keep your concentration levels high, he would say sort of walk around the box. So just on the edge of the box, but follow the play, you know, walk, just keep walking and keep your mind focused. Because as you say, Joe, it's easy sometimes to take a look at the crowd or something or start reading advertising boards, flicking up on the side of the pitch or whatever it might be, you know. And next thing, the ball's in your box and you're maybe out of position or something, you know. So that's probably a thing for young kids as well. You have to try and stay really focused. I remember Packy also saying, it's like after games as well, sometimes you'd be just soaking with sweat. I'm like, Packy didn't make any saves today. You know, like not in a bad way. Just like, well, I don't maybe making that many saves. Yeah, but it's the concentration levels of a goalkeeper. And I got to that level as well, where the concentration was so much in some of the big games that, yeah, sometimes you wouldn't make a save in a game or you wouldn't have very little to do, but you'd still be drenched, Joe, because of the focus and the concentration levels have to be really so high at the level we both played at.
You'd be going, I played well today. Zero saves, but I was good.
Joe, I think the other big change is that you have to be composed too now. You know, you have to be ready before that ball comes back to you, and you've got to be in a sense of composure, you know. In my day, it was about almost adrenaline rush to keep them, because we had to come for crosses. Goalkeepers don't come for crosses more, but we had to come out among them and catch it against big guys and that. And you're almost building yourself up to have that physical contact. Now it's about just almost calming yourself down and keep thinking, keep living the game as we talk about, but being composed when the ball comes to you, you know.
Packy, was there ever a time, I asked this in light almost of David De Gea and what a strange 2 years he's having, was there ever a time where you lost confidence?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. I lost confidence in the World Cup in 94. And I don't know why. I do know why now looking back on it. And it was down to really about, it depends on your personality also. I'm very much an organized type person. I like to have my boots ready. I like to have my gloves ready the night before. I like to have the strip up on the. I like to be in time and I like all of that type of stuff. And see when you get to that point and it's going well and you're in control. But see when you lose control of that, out in America, I thought that's what can upset me, because we couldn't train for the full hour that we normally train for. We couldn't train probably the intensity that we trained because of the heat. It was incredible. We didn't have a goalkeeper coach that could talk you through and tell you that you were okay. We didn't have a psychologist. Jerry Payton was no longer there as more of a confident. It was Alan, and Alan was younger than me. So I didn't have that sort of kind of almost environment around me. Even though I was 34 years old, I was almost kind of... So confidence sort of almost went down very, very quickly in me. And I'm not saying that's what caused me making the big mistake that I did against things, but I just didn't feel 100%. And there's times in your career, I remember actually playing with Celtic and probably around about 1984, 85, David Haye was the manager. I felt absolutely brilliant. I felt brilliant in training. I felt unbeatable at times in training. And you get those periods. And then other times, I couldn't make a save, you know, that kind of way. So the mind is probably is much more important than maybe anything else. And if that sort of goes, especially for a goalkeeper's point of view, then certainly it can affect you big time. I don't know, Shay, if you've had those times in your career or so on that probably affected you, but it's not an easy area to get control of. And when you're then as a coach trying to talk to young people, how do you actually get inside their mind? Goal setting is a big thing now. We talk about also in goalkeeping coaching, creating your own goals and setting them out and come up with positive programs. But a goalkeeper coach has to buy into all that. That's not an easy area. And that's maybe where the psychologists come into it a little bit. I don't know, Shay, you might have more experience.
Yeah. Your level. I think I was, about 23, 24, and I was probably my worst critic, so I made a mistake. I was so hard on myself. I was, couldn't get over it, but kept thinking about it as the game was going on and stuff. And that's the worst thing you can have as a goalkeeper. You make a mistake and you're thinking of how did I manage to do that or whatever. And the game, you still got 70 or 80 minutes to play in the game, So I remember we played Blackburn away once and I think I came for a cross and I dropped it or something. And then the guy had a shot and Nico Stabbage, that was on the line, our centre half, and he saved it with his hand. So after about 5 minutes, there's a penalty, which in my head, it's my fault, and we got a man less away from home. So 1-0, we end up losing something like 5, I think, Joe. We got battered that day against Blackburn. But for the rest of the game, I was kind of thinking about that mistake, and I was like, oh, I think I might have been fault for at least one or maybe two more goals in that game. And I was like, there must be something I can do to just took it on board myself that there must be somebody who can help me. Because back then, it was maybe seen as a weakness, Packy, if you needed a psychologist or you needed somebody to talk to. I mean, just get on with it. There's that sort of mentality, get yourself, dust yourself down, you'll be fine. But I just took it on myself, Joe, to think there must be somebody who can help me. And I went to see the physio at Newcastle at the time, Derek Wright, I think he's still there actually. And he suggested this guy in Cardiff who's a sports psychologist who actually was a goalkeeper as well. And he's in his time when he's younger and stuff, so he understood the position. As you say, Joe, there's long periods in a game you could make a mistake and you might not touch the ball again for 20 minutes. So it's like you have to have sort of mistake management, call it what you want, but triggers you have to do within a game. If you make a mistake, to park it to one side, maybe reopen it after the game when the game's over and deal with it that way. But I felt that from then onwards, working with Richard Mullen, the guy's name was fantastic for me personally. It helped me to go on to, I think, another level and help to improve. And as Packy says, I think what goes on between your ears is so important and sometimes overlooked by different people, and I think it's a huge part of the game.
Can I ask Shay, if you concede a goal and you're watching the opposition celebrating and the ball's going up and tip-off is about to happen and you're stood with your hands on your hips going, that was me and I know that was me and everyone knows that was me. When you got to grips with your routine of dealing with the mistake, what was then going on in your head? What was the map that you use to get clicked in again for the rest of the game?
Well, the first thing was body language. I think probably that day at Blackburn, if you looked at my body language, I would have been literally shaking my head. But then the next thing you got to show to the world and people, because there's cameras all over the place, is to walk around tall and go, just bring it on. The next thing, you park it to one side straight away.
Right.
And body language is a massive thing, I think, in any sport, and it's to show you're not affected. Even though you might be a little bit affected, you just go sort of tunnel vision, focused on the game in hand. And there was different things we used to, it would take a long time to explain it all, but little things about putting the mistake into a bag and zipping it up, and we'll revisit it after the game. Lots of different things how to deal with mistake management stuff. But it was key to focus on the next sort of thing you're going to get involved, the next involvement in the game, the next time the ball's going to come to you, you're not thinking about that mistake.
I would suspect putting it in the bag and tying the bag saying, I will deal with that later, is important, because the perfectionist in you is going to want to examine the mistake. So you almost have to tell yourself, look, don't worry, we'll analyze this to death. We absolutely will. Yeah. But now is not the time, is the point.
Yeah. Well, some mistakes you can look back at and think, well, should have done this, should have done that, from a pure technical point of view. I don't know if you remember the goal at Coventry when Dean Dublin sneaked behind me. It was probably replayed about a million times at this stage, but that's something I look back at and I've sort of been shoved down my throat quite a few times. But, I've never, when I threw the ball down, after that incident, I've obviously learned from it. I've never threw the ball down, I've been looking around me, looking behind me. I'm quite obsessed with it because, I don't know if you remember, I went for a cross and I took a cross and Dean Dublin was challenging me. I didn't even know. And he sort of sat on the advertising board and waited. Was when the new 6-second rule came in as well. That's first season. Sort of like looking for Shearer to move. Obviously, Al didn't move that much. So I was like, okay, what do you do? So I've put the ball down and Dean Dublin jumped off the advertising board, sneaked up behind me and stuck it in the net. And then I've had to live with the only Irishman not to know where Dublin is. So So for the rest of my career, but again, you analyse it, you made a mistake. You've got to park it to one side, Joe, and think of the rest of the game. Luckily enough, I think Rob Lee scored a screamer to get us a draw that day and sort of spare me blushes a little bit.
Joe, it's great to hear Shay talking about that whole the model that he has and so on, and going through that process of having a psychologist there and just giving you a process to think about these little things. Some processes work for certain people in different ways. And I think that's a big change also that's come into it. In our day, we didn't have, and Shay was absolutely right, if you made a mistake, it was a sign of weakness if you went to somebody and you went to talk to somebody about it or so on and so forth. So now that's very much evident in the game, that the psychologists have a role to play. Now, they can overdo it. I remember Dean Kiley also. He used to have a little note, and he used to, I don't know what he wrote on it, but he used to put it in behind the goal. Now, whether that was his comfort blanket or whatever, but he used to have a little thing in the goal and he had things written on it. So everybody has their own way of dealing with things, but it's a process. And if you can get it, fantastic. I didn't have that maybe opportunity to almost go through the thinking it out because psychologists weren't there. And if you went to a psychologist, forget it, forget it. You know, you almost actually had to go the opposite way. You almost had to say, I'm going to be just brave here and almost tell people, if you made a mistake, you know, F off, and I'm the guy. And you cannot put on this bravado, this kind of act, to say that you were above it all, or otherwise you would just crumble. And many people did crumble.
Yeah, I'm sure they did. Shay, there was one last aspect I wanted to ask you about. Packy mentioned there even Jerry Payton being a confidant and really missing him at USA 94. And goalkeepers are slightly strange, unlike outfield players, in that they are often training and spending a lot of time directly with their rival. You know, you, Alan Kelly, Dean Kiley, you're a little bunch. But equally, one of you gets to play, the other two don't. How did you find that in your career? Generally, was there a good relationship with, say, you and the number two and the goalkeeping group? Or could it be slightly tricky terrain to be, you know, spending all that time with somebody you're vying with for the number one jersey?
Yeah. Well, luckily enough, I was, well, not all the time playing it, but a good majority of the time when I was in the squad, I played. So it was probably easier, Joe, for me to deal with. But I did obviously go to the Euros, to the recent Euros. I didn't play. You know, Darren Randolph played, and I felt I was more in a sort of support network for Darren to be at his best. We had a great tournament, actually, in France. But it was a different sort of aspect. And I was later in my career and stuff. But I was in my prime and I wasn't playing, then I don't know how I would have reacted. But to be fair to Dean Kiley and Alan Kelly and the people you mentioned, you know, they were always great support for me in training. We would help each other in training. We would keep each other going and always wish us well before the game. We wanted the best for the country. We wanted the best for, you know, when you're even playing at club level. I think of Steve Harper, who's at Newcastle a long number of years, was good friends of mine. But we're still vying for that number one jersey. But, you know, we kept pushing me and we kept helping each other in training as much as we could. And that's just, we talked before about the union, the goalkeepers union. You know, it is a fact. We are a sort of, whatever you want to call it, a strange breed of things, but we do stick together as well. We know the position. We know the pressure that comes with the position, playing a goal. You know, if you make a mistake, 9 times out of 10, it's going to be a goal, and the world eyes are focused on you. So there is a lot of pressure with playing in goals. Yeah. But I think you have to spin that round and use that as a positive. Always felt that the pressure, as I said at the start, was something you wanted to have going into a game, and tension and nerves and whatever. It's all a sort of concoction of to get the best out of you, and that was part and parcel of playing at the top level.
Joe, I think also on that point, I think most goalkeepers realise that I'm in the position this today and the other guys are helping me, and it could be them the next day. You know, even if you're a backup, you say, well, I need Shay's help maybe next or next month if I'm in the position. So we kind of have that bond together from that perspective also. While there's rivalry there, it's a kind of a respective rivalry. And I think that works really well. Now you'll get the odd one or two that's maybe, I don't know. I think Jens Lehmann and was it Neuer or not Jens Lehmann and
Almunia, I think it was Lehmann and Almunia, I think at Arsenal didn't get on.
They didn't get on that very well and that. So, you know, you will have the exception. But in general terms, I think goalkeepers always... And we go out together too. When we go out in the town, we go out together and have a few beers, you know, and that's the other thing. You know, the forwards are the ones that's out on the dance floor and all that. We're in the bars having the chat.
We're at the business end.
Yeah. More refined bunch. A big couple of months coming up for Irish football. Shay, your thoughts on Stephen Kenny coming to the job? I asked this because Jason McAteer, by his own admission, and made all sorts of headlines when he was talking in the last couple of days. And he was saying, you know, he was referencing back to Brian Kerr's time, and he was wondering about, I suppose, to put it bluntly, is there a certain snobbishness in the dressing room when a manager coming from League of Ireland or underage steps up into the international job? Stephen Kenny is doing that now. What's your sense of all that? You were obviously in a dressing room when Brian Kerr was there, and you'd have a bit of a sense of the dressing room now.
I can understand a little bit, I think, Joe, but I'm quite excited about Stephen Kenny being the manager. You know, I know he likes to, we're talking about building up from the back, but he does like the possession of the ball, likes to keep hold of the ball. He likes to, you know, have a more possession-based sort of game. And I think it kind of be, it'd be interesting to see, you know, for the players to adapt. But I do think we have the players who can adapt. Because I used to think at times, under all the managers in Ireland, you know, Trapattoni, McCarthy, all the managers who work with Brian Kerr, whatever, we were at times a bit too direct, in my liking, in the way the game, we talk about the game moving on and stuff. And I think it's going to be quite, well, hopefully, anyway, quite refreshing to think that, you know, we have got good enough players to keep possession of the ball and try and build through the different thirds. And yes, at times you have to, we'll have to kick it long, but I think it's going to be interesting to see how Stephen does. And that's his coaching side. I know he's got Damien Duffin and Keith Andrews as well, who, you know, young coaches and know the game pretty well as well. So it's going to be an interesting mix. I think the angle Jason's coming at was more the, I suppose, not managing big personalities and managing at a big club and the pressure that comes with that. You know, Stephen, I've seen Stephen's interview where he says he won't get a bigger job than this. This is the biggest job, even if he moves on to club football after this. You know, this is the pinnacle of his career as manager of Ireland. And I suppose rightly so, the manager of country is a phenomenal thing. So we think, as a nation, we have to get behind them, no matter who the manager's been, even before I played for her. And we were always huge supporters of the manager. And I think that's key now, that we get behind Stephen and his team and hopefully they can qualify.
Because I'd have to say, Shay, you'd be disappointed if, given the jobs he has done, admittedly with Dundalk, and that might be looked down upon by certain players, but a brilliant job with Dundalk, European football, where they've played an excellent brand of football, and even the job he's done with the under-21s of late has been phenomenal. Like, our 21s are playing some fantastic football and getting results. You know, he's made all those transitions brilliantly. You'd think no one in that dressing room has a right to be in any way feeling, well, this is somehow an inferior CV to one I should be working with.
No, definitely not. I know Paddy will tell you the same. To pull on the Irish jersey, you could have Mike Bassett in charge or whatever, football manager. You're just proud. You just want some sort of organisation. But as I say, for me personally, from a coaching point of view, it'll be interesting to see us play now and try and keep the ball and keep possession of the ball. And the pressure will come with that as well, Joe, because in a sense, the fans will maybe need a little bit of education in the sense as well that we're changing the style of play a little bit and how we want to, as I say, keep the ball built up in the back. And I suppose all fans want to do is get us qualified. I suppose they don't care how we get there, you know, by long ball or keeping the ball or possession ball. We talk about just getting the balance, but I'm really intrigued by how it's all going to sort of pan out and how Stephen sets his team up and hopefully
Joe,
adapt to his style of play.
Yeah, I think the challenge for Stephen will be the transition period of getting those younger group of players who maybe some of them are not playing in the first teams, you know, they're not getting that run of games, maybe to make that big step into international football. There's a big difference between club and international, even under 21, getting up to a senior team, as Shay will know that.
Sure.
And getting that sort of contrition between the group that he had, or Mick had, the older few experience, and bringing in the young ones and getting that right. Because at the end of the day, it's about winning. You know, and he's taken on the qualification now from Mick. If that could go in the right direction, which would be fantastic. That gives him a little bit of time to make, as she says, that whole adaptability to the way that he wants to play and so on. But if it doesn't go, then the pressure's on right away. And then you go into your qualification games. And unfortunately, at any international level, you know, qualification now is almost a must to stay in a job. But that's the challenge for any young manager. Yeah, you know, and I hope it goes really well for Stephen, and we wish him well. As Shay rightly says, every manager takes on that role. You want them to do the very best, because we're Irish supporters and we want to be out there supporting them in the big tournaments. But you've got to get to that qualification, and that's the challenge. And he's got two bites of the cherry now, added the qualification for this and then the next one, and see how it goes. But yeah, we want to see them play. And Shay's right in the way that probably the game has moved on. We want to see, can they actually change a little bit and play, but you've got to get results with that too.
And Paki, you were part of the Brian Kerr era. Did you feel that he suffered from a lack of respect by the dressing room because of his CV at that stage?
I didn't think so, because he had, you know, he had all of that young group that he had great results. And Brian's a unique character. You know, Brian is a different kind of character than probably most managers. He's so intense in the game. He had Chris Hughton, who was a great coach around about him, great professional also. Mm. And, you know, he filled the gap. Noel O'Reilly was there, obviously his confidant, his pal, his friend, and that. But I didn't really think that there was maybe that any disrespect for Brian. Brian was unfortunate a wee bit too, that he was only in the job 2 years.
Yeah, he didn't get much time.
Any international manager must be given, for me, at least 4 years. Now, maybe into your second block of 2 years, you know, the second block, that if things aren't going well, then they might change it. But at least give him 4 years to see what he can do. Can he change the squad around? Can he adapt to the way that he's thinking, and so on? Maybe get older guys out of the system that he feels isn't going to do it, and then change around. But 4 years is a generous period. But 2 years is really, really difficult. So I felt really sorry for Brian from that perspective. He wasn't given that extra couple of years to see, could he actually move it on again and get that, as I say, qualification is the key thing, you know what I mean, winning games.
Mm. Shay, it's interesting you made the point there. You thought we were a bit more direct under a couple of managers across maybe a decade or so than we might have been otherwise. So you definitely feel we had the players to play a better brand of football, because I suspect if you were to talk to Trapp in his private moments, he'd say, nah. I did what I did with them. That's the level they were at.
I mean, to be fair, Trapp Tony, obviously a phenomenal manager around the world and fantastic CV.
Achieved with Ireland as well. I'm sure he'd argue, look, I do all right with them.
Yeah, true. The only tactical sort of stuff I got from Trapp was hit the ball down and kick it straight down the middle of the pitch, hit the striker or else hit the centre half, two wingers join in, two midfielders back it up and we'll get the second balls. And I always felt that We were better than that. We had better players than to at least try and play a little bit when we could. But that was just, you know, as Paki says, everyone's different. He'll look at our team and think maybe we're not good enough. Maybe ask me just thinking we are good enough, but maybe we weren't good enough. And he, obviously a great manager in his career, thought this is a better way to play. We'll get results. But I just feel that a lot of players, you know, we've got Premier League players, we've got Championship players, a lot of players now who play for Ireland, the current players I'm talking about, you know, a lot of the club football, they play with the possession-based football, they play with balls out the back and stuff. And then I always felt with going with Ireland and stuff, we didn't see too much of that. We didn't see, you know, playing out too much. I mean, Mick maybe started playing out a bit more this time around, I suppose, and a bit more organised maybe than previously. But I'm just intrigued to see how it's going to work out. Joe, can these players adapt to this and playing for your country and having the bravery to play out under pressure, because it's high stakes, as Paki says, qualifications all that matters. But you know, Stephen Kenny will be drilling into them. This is how he wants to play. This is what we want to do. And if the players buy into it, which I'm sure they will, then it'll be really hopefully successful times ahead.
Well, I agree with you. I think it's one of the reasons, Paki, a lot of people are quite excited, is that maybe for the first time we're going to have a manager coming on board who is just unequivocal about the fact that he wants the team to play possession football. It's not ifs, buts, maybes. It's this is how we're going to play. And we're finally going to see how that works for an Irish team.
Well, you know, I don't know how Stephen's going to think when he gets into those first couple of games. He might say, okay, great, but I need to win games here. I might have to change and adapt a little bit from that philosophy. Philosophy is one thing in football. We all have a philosophy. Listen, I played with Celtic Football Club and we had a philosophy of playing the game out and so on. International football, it was slightly different because we had to win games and over a very short period. So everything is, you have a philosophy, but you have to adapt to the players that you have and win games. And Stephen might start off that way, but he may have to change a little. But that's up to him and his staff to come up with a way of winning games, because ultimately that's international football. I'll tell you what's really important is to make a connection between what the underage international teams are doing and the young players there, and as Shay talked about, and the senior players, and have a kind of almost a little bit of a continuity from the way that they're taught and the way that they play into the senior team. I think that's probably been missing a little bit, that connection. Now, Stephen's gone in as international director of football. I don't know what that means. I don't really know how it differs from the high performance director. All of that's kind of, I don't know how it works, but there's been fantastic work done with the Colin O'Briens, the Tom Moens, the Jimmy Crawford's now got an under 21 level. Those guys down there have done a tremendous job with a lot of young, there's a lot of good young talent coming through. Stephen's now the beneficiary of it a little bit. He had them at under 21 level, so they know his style. But I keep going back to it, he will have to adapt to get results. Senior international football is completely different than underage. But having a connection through that, making sure that we have a philosophy going forward, a strategy to say that these young players are going to get the opportunity, that's all the business of the FAI now. And please don't underestimate how important international underage football is. And that's where the money has to be spent, because our young players don't get the opportunity at the big clubs to play in European football too often. And they have to learn what difference is European football and what it means then to play international football at the high level. And making those, connecting all that up, for me, is the way ahead, having that strategy.
Yeah, well, I guess we're going to see how it all plays out. Very lastly, Shay, are you hoping to get into coaching, head coach, managerial role, or will it be goalkeeping coaching, or have you figured all that out yet?
Good question, Joe. Good question to finish. At the minute, my headspace is, you know, I've signed a 3-year contract. I'm in the third year of that contract now. The first year, obviously, I worked under Frank Lampard and Jody Morris. This season, obviously, with Philip Cocu, or last season, whatever it is, you know, with the Dutch guys now and different styles, different, you know, managers. And I'm going to see this year out, I think, and then make a decision maybe in the summertime. I feel like I've got more to offer. I feel like I could do a, you know, Packy's sort of got the t-shirt. He was an assistant manager, as he mentioned, at Reading. I do feel that I could maybe step up. I feel like it would be a step up to be an assistant perhaps somewhere, or a first team coach maybe to coach more outfield players and try and sort of go down that route. That's me sort of burning desire in the back of my head. Be it right or wrong, Joe, I don't know at the minute, but that's, you know, I'm learning every day. As I say, I've got a great manager in Philip Cocu. He's, as I say, very open and very honest with everything. Helps me with anything, you know, any questions I've got on how the game should be played or anything. He's very open. And for me, it's learning every single day. So
yeah,
part of me wants to be down the road, hopefully, maybe a coach or a manager one day, perhaps.
Joe, do you want Shay to get grey hair very quickly? That's what you get when you go into management, Shay.
That's my hair short at the side, lads. It's very grey on the side, so keep it really short so you can't really see it that well.
A lot of focus on the hair this evening. What do I
mean? There's a lot of focus.
What do goalkeepers know about outfield play? I'm sure that's the feeling in the game, is it, Shay?
By the way, sorry, Joe, I'm going to butt in there. Who won the Europa League this year?
Julian Lopetegui, goalkeeper himself, yeah.
Goalkeeper himself. The one game, Wolves versus Wolves, were in it. Two goalkeepers, ex-goalkeepers, up against each other in that, was it a quarter-final?
There you go. Yeah.
So that says it all for me.
That says it all. I do you come up against that perception, Shay, a little bit? Goalkeepers.
I think you're probably right a little bit, Joe, yeah. I think you're a little bit right. Because I've said a couple of times to a few players different things that they should have done, and they sometimes take it on board, but the odd time one of them would be looking and go, he's a goalkeeping coach, like, what does he know about my positional sense as a right winger, a left winger, whoever I spoke to at the time? It was kind of like, so you have to get over that sort of hurdle, I think. I think we're part of a coaching team. Yeah, my head is head of the goalkeeping department, but at the same time, you know, we talk about all the games we've played and the experiences we've had with all these different managers and coaches through your career. I think if any coach says anything to you, I think it would be naive of a player not to take it on board, because genuinely you're trying to help the guy out and trying to improve his game. So there is probably a little bit of a stigma when you've got the title of goalkeeping coach. But, you know, as I say, if I moved on from that, perhaps maybe a first team coach or an assistant or whatever, then perhaps
there was a discussion around that at UEFA level when we were putting coaching courses together about maybe even changing the title a little bit to be a coach with specialization for goalkeeping. But what we did do, and Shay knows this, is that all goalkeeper coaches at the highest level now needs not just have a goalkeeping coach's certificate, they also have to have their outfield badges so that they and they get respect and status for being a coach and understanding the game. And it's almost about building credibility among the other outfield staff.
Yeah, I can imagine. Listen, fellas, it's been fantastic. We've touched on a whole bunch of things here on our first Remote Roadshow in partnership with Cadbury FC. You can check out cadburyfc.com for updates and promotions and giveaways. We've got more shows coming up with Cadbury over the while. But to our two goalkeepers, the two boys from Donegal, done good, lads. It was great. I didn't fully realise how kind of close a relationship you'd had from such a long way back. So it's been brilliant to listen to some of the stories this evening. Paddy Bonner, Shay Given, thanks very much, fellas.
The Off the Ball podcast on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.